Hey, Nicole, what's in the bag?
This bag, Raleigh? This bag is full of natural gas.
I guess, why?
Because we're going to use it to replace coal. It's natural, so that means it's good for us.
Okay.
There's a ton of it in America.
Uh-huh.
It comes right out of my stove. How do you think I got this?
Okay.
And we can use it to bridge the gap while your precious little windmills get started up.
Okay, first of all, those windmills are very big. And second of all, there's about 1,000 problems with what you just said.
Okay, is it going to take a long time to explain them? Because I did leave my stove on.
All right, Nicole. Today we're talking about the myth that natural gas is better for the planet than coal and that it can be used as a sort of bridge fuel to trebuchet us forward into the world of renewable energy.
Great use of trebuchet.
Thank you.
Now, do you know the difference between a trebuchet and a catapult?
Fucking absolutely I know the difference between a trebuchet and a catapult.
I shouldn't have asked.
When I was in Boy Scouts at the Scoutcraft Lodge, we built a trebuchet.
Whoa, that rules.
We didn't build no catapult.
Was it for like pumpkins?
It was for cinder blocks.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
This was not a good, this was a dangerous place to be alive.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're here with us today.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, let's talk about natural gas.
That's right. I'm going to play you a couple clips. I doubt you'll be able to figure out who this person is just from their incredibly iconic voice, but let's give it a shot.
Now, one of the biggest factors in bringing more jobs back is our commitment to American energy. The all-the-above energy strategy I announced a few years ago is working, and today America is closer to energy independence than we have been in decades. One of the reasons why is natural gas. If extracted safely, it's the bridge fuel that can power our economy with less of the carbon pollution that causes climate change. Businesses plan to invest almost $100 billion in new factories that use natural gas.
So who was that? Fran Drescher?
That was Fran Drescher.
Wow,
yeah.
I nailed it.
That was early Fran before she adopted her nanny persona. No, obviously that was Barack Obama. That was the 2014 State of the Union address. And I will note that nobody in that Congress knew when to applaud. There was like a moment where he was like in the middle of a sentence and they heard like natural gas.
Here's,
and they just
here's
let
the
it
thing.
Rip.
Obama talks with so many pauses that sometimes it's like,
He's baiting you into clapping so he can be disapproving
it's
of your
like
claps.
When you go to a classical music concert and you're like, is that the end or is it just a pause and it's going to be a new movement now? And then you feel like an idiot.
I mean, just the fact that you go to classical music concerts means you should probably feel pretty smart, Nicole.
I mean, I always do.
All right. Well, here's another voice that you probably recognize. This is from 2019.
From right here in Hackberry, Louisiana, you will very soon be exporting clean American natural gas all over the globe with the incredible grit, skill, and pride. The 7,000 workers at this facility are helping lead the American energy revolution. That's what it is. Number one in the world, not even close. And you know, I just approved a lot of pipelines going through Texas and other places, including, as you know, the Keystone XL pipeline I approved.
Hackberry, Louisiana sounds like a town I would make up for like a dumb Southern character to be from.
Yeah, or like, where is that guy from? Gumbo on a Sunday? Where is he from? Hackberry, Louisiana? Jesus Christ. Something like that. And so that was Trump also touting the clean natural gas, number one in the world, not even close. Not sure what he's referring to, but... Number one best in the world. Anyway, so we start to see this narrative building that natural gas is a clean, renewable fuel. It stands as a thing that could get us away from coal.
Uh-huh.
And we're also seeing some bipartisanship embrace this narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But that was 2019. Maybe the Dems have kind of changed their tune. Here is a video by the Natural Allies for a Clean Energy Future. It's called Earth Day 2023, and it was from February 2023.
Wow, that's recent.
There hasn't even been another Earth Day since then.
Oh, yeah, wow.
And the voice you're about to hear is Tim Ryan, the former Democratic congressman from Ohio and briefly a presidential candidate in 2020. Do you remember this guy?
Yes, I do.
He sort of looks like just a base level loadout of a guy.
Yeah, if you pick white man emoji.
Yes, yeah,
that's
and he
who
came
he is.
To life.
Yeah.
That's Tim Ryan. Here it is.
As we're going into Earth Day, I think it's really important for people to recognize how much natural gas can help us reduce emissions by displacing coal.
One of the many benefits of natural gas and our domestic supply is that we can also export our natural gas. And as we provide natural gas more in the United States and abroad, we can eliminate international coal.
That's a huge impact around the world.
So that's the narrative that we're going to be talking about today, this idea that natural gas is better than coal, it's cleaner than coal, it'll replace coal, and we can get to renewables whenever they are able to come online.
Sure, we're pacing ourselves.
That's right. Well, because, you know, renewables aren't all ready yet, they got stage fright, it's taking them a second.
Right, and so natural gas is here to be like the interim performer while like somebody's backstage being like, you got this, renewables, you can do it, believe in yourself.
Yeah, that is the concept, and it all kind of hinges on this idea that natural gas will be a bridge fuel. So it'll replace coal. And then once it sort of destabilizes coal, then it'll go away when renewables come online.
And I've heard a lot of people who I think are really smart, genuinely smart, say bridge fuel.
Yeah. And I think it would be a good thing if it were true.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing coming up. All right. First of all, let's talk about some terms. What is natural gas?
Why are you asking me? It's your episode.
That's a great point, and I better just tell you. Natural gas is a fossil fuel. It's primarily composed of methane.
Okay.
Methane is CH4. Mm-hmm. It's a hydrocarbon. You burn it, it explodes, and you can use it to make electricity.
Got it.
It's not named natural gas because the gas industry wanted to like give it a positive spin.
Mm-hmm.
You find it in pockets under the ground or locked in shale under the ground, and it bubbles up different places and you can capture it and burn it that way. So it bubbles up and in its natural state, it's a gas, so it's natural gas.
Did the fossil fuel industry not call it natural gas because it sounds bad? I had always heard that natural gas was a term that was used like to make it seem better.
Sure. Yeah. No, it was not coined by the fossil fuel industry as a way to like give it a positive spin, but it certainly was leaned into.
It didn't hurt.
It did not hurt.
They weren't like, oh no, don't tell them it's natural.
You better call it methane gas. We don't want people to get the wrong idea. This is like a positive thing.
Should we call it the thing that makes it sound like it comes from Whole Foods or the thing that makes it sound like it comes from a meth lab?
First of all, what is a Whole Foods? This is 1890. Anyway, that's what natural gas is. We get a lot of our electricity from burning natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
We also pipe it directly into houses. You might have a gas stove in your house.
Wow, that was accusatory, but yes, we do.
I do too. We live in New York.
My landlord picked it. The place I'm moving into has an electric stove. Brag.
Very cool. You also pipe natural gas into businesses and heavy industry as a way to like produce a lot of heat.
Okay.
Okay. You've also probably heard about LNG.
Yes.
That's liquefied natural gas. We don't really actually need to get into that too much. Just know that whenever you hear the term LNG, you're usually hearing it because we've taken fracked gas, we've fracked in America, we're liquefying it or cooling it way down to compress it.
So when we frack it, it's like a gas in the sense of like it's in the air. It's air.
Yes, although it's in fracking fluid. It's trapped in shale.
So it's like
we
blast
it out of the shale.
It's like carbonation.
Yes.
It's like in a soda.
Yeah. It's trapped in little shale deposits.
Okay.
We blast it out of the shale, pump it full of fracking fluid, suck the fracking fluid back, and then we're able to isolate the natural gas, which is mostly methane, out of that.
Great.
And then if you're exporting it to another country like the EU, England, India, Japan, South Korea, you're going to want to put it into a big, big boat, but you need to compress it first. So you liquefy it by super cooling the natural gas into liquefied natural gas or LNG, putting it in a boat, sending it to a different country.
Sounds easy enough.
Yeah. So the only time you're going to hear the term LNG, it's usually in the context of taking natural gas, liquefying it, and sending it away.
When it's in transport.
That's right. Okay, so in order to understand this, like, is natural gas better than coal? Should we be really leaning into it as a technology? I got to take you all the way back to the year 2009.
Ooh, are we going to go to an MGMT concert?
Wow. Were they big in 2009?
They were huge in the Brooklyn scene when I was a freshman at NYU.
And that year was?
2008, 2009.
Nice. All right. So we're going to look at the graph of U.S. electricity generation by source from 1950 to about 2009.
Okay.
I'm going to direct your eyes to this brown layer. What can you tell me about the brown layer versus all the other layers combined?
Yeah. So there's a few different colors, but the brown layer, which is the bottom layer, is the one that experienced the most growth and is the biggest overall. So whatever the brown source is, I have to imagine, is the biggest source of U.S. electricity generation.
That's right. And would it surprise you to hear that the brown layer is coal?
It would not. I was going to guess that, but I didn't want to steal your thunder in case I was right.
If you so much as steal one little strike of my thunder, I'm going to lose my goddamn mind.
I know. And you can control the thunder, so that scares me.
That's true. My father was
Zeus,
a thunder keeper.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
Let's write a YA novel about it.
Yes, the Thunder Keepers.
Yeah.
And it's like a young man who's like going to school and they're like, you're the chosen one. And he's like, yeah, probably. All right. So if you're not looking at this graph, I'm just going to describe it real quick for you. It's U.S. electricity generation by major source from 1950 to 2009, and coal is absolutely the biggest chunk. It's bigger mm-hmm. than all the other chunks combined. Mm-hmm. We get more of our electricity from coal than we get from anything else. And coal is terrible for the planet,
mm-hmm.
okay? It's
mm-hmm.
dirty, it's polluting, there's no question of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the number one source of electricity. So coal-fired power plants are out here just blasting out carbon dioxide all day, every day from most of the states.
That's the kind of hustle culture that is toxic to this country.
Rise and grind at
coal.
The coal-fired power plant. That's right. And all the environmental groups and environmental muscle is aimed at taking down coal because
mm-hmm.
it's the
big baddie.
It's the big bad. Yeah, it's the final boss, mm-hmm. right? We got to take down coal. America relies on coal to get its electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've ever tried to like live your life without electricity. It sucks.
Oh, yeah. I've been camping.
It's very difficult.
It's bad.
Yeah. The novelty is fun, but after mm-hmm. about 3 days, it's like, I need a printer.
That's the first thing you miss when you're camping?
For me,
you're camping. You have to cart your own shit out of the mountains.
Wait, where are you camping?
If you're backpacking, you're supposed to carry it out with you.
Have you ever been backpacking and carried your shit out with you?
No. The last time I went backpacking, my dad gave us a tent from the 70s. And when it rained a little bit, we got so soaking wet that we had to hike 13 miles back to the car after we'd already hiked 13 miles in that day.
I bet you wish you had your printer then. Write him a strongly worded letter and print it out and hand it to him.
That's true.
But ain't no electricity on camping trips.
That's true.
Okay. America runs on electricity.
America runs on Dunkin'.
Dunkin', yeah. America runs on Dunkin' Donuts, and America powers those Dunkin' Donuts restaurants. Restaurants? Dunkin' Donuts restaurants with coal.
Okay.
Okay. So in 2002, we got 633 coal-fired power plants, according
Ooh,
to the EIA.
Seems like kind of a lot.
It's a fucking lot. There's only 50 states.
Yeah.
There's only 50 states, 633 coal-fired power plants. Coal generates a lot of carbon dioxide, mm-hmm. which is bad for climate mm-hmm. change, but it also generates a lot of sulfur dioxide.
Ooh.
In 2006, the EPA did this study on 86 of the big coal-fired power plants and found that they were emitting 5,389,592 tons of sulfur dioxide, which was over a quarter of all the U.S. sulfur dioxide emissions.
That seems like a lot. That's annually?
Yeah. I mean, it'll fluctuate, but every single year, at least that much.
Ew.
Sulfur dioxide, of course, is damaging to the lungs, health, and it also has some weird climate implications, which you've talked about on previous episodes.
Yeah, if you want to hear more about the climate implications of pumping a bunch of sulfates into the atmosphere, check out the episode we just recorded on solar geoengineering.
That's right. And coal-fired power plants are a big source of that. At least mm-hmm. a quarter of America's sulfur emissions were from just 86 of America's coal-fired power plants. Also, there's mercury. In 1999, the DOE looked at utility-owned coal plants and found them emitting a third of all the mercury that America emits.
Ooh.
So coal-fired power plants are not the good guys here.
Is there a chance that like a little bit of mercury is good for you?
If it's in a thermometer and your doctor needs it to know your temperature, then
because
yes.
your doctor's from the 1800s.
Wait a minute. You know how thermometers work, right?
Do you know how a modern thermometer, it's the thing they say, you don't stick it in your under your tongue.
What do you do now?
You stick it in your ear. They got those electric ones.
Oh, wow. I have not yet. Have you? When's the last time you had a thermometer anywhere in your body?
Oh, anywhere in my body?
Okay.
I bought one right before COVID.
Really?
Right before the lockdowns.
And you're like, I'm going to need to know what my...
Yeah.
I cannot remember the last time I got... I got a thermometer. I guess I didn't realize that.
That thermometer technology had advanced?
Yeah.
When you go get a physical, do they do the under the tongue mercury thermometer?
No, my doctor just saws my legs off. I gotta go to a different doctor. My insurance is terrible. Hey there, a little inside baseball. We record this very podcast at the Climate Town office. And if you're not familiar with Climate Town, it's a YouTube series we make for as cheaply as possible. And that means schlepping our camera equipment all over New York City.
Yes, our backpacks are full, and the gear we reach for every time is peak design.
That voice you just heard is Ben Bolt, the executive producer of this podcast and of Climate Town.
That's right, Riley.
I mean, this is an ad, but we are genuinely loaded with peak design gear, from backpacks to sling bags to camera accessories. And by we, I usually just mean Ben. Ben literally has like 7 things from Peak Design on during any given shoot.
Yeah, really. I mean, they make good stuff. My freaking phone case from Peak Design. My phone charger on my desk. That's Peak Design too. My out front bike mount that I can put my phone on. Guess what? Peak Design. You know that little tripod we use on Climate Town shoots?
The little travel tripod?
The little travel tripod. They got organizers. They got straps, clips, duffel bags, everyday bags.
And they're not fucking around. Peak Design gear is guaranteed for life, whether you buy it firsthand or 10th hand.
And they can make that kind of commitment and not go broke because they build stuff to last.
As my father would say, it's built like a brick shit house. And now I'm hearing it out loud, that term is a little dated.
Peak Design is a certified fair trade B Corp that prides itself on recyclable materials, and it lobbies lawmakers in D.C. for environmental legislation. They're also the group who nominated Climate Town to be an environmental partner with 1% for the Planet, so double thank you. And they also have been a podcast supporter of ours from day one. And also, they just make really good stuff.
So go to peakdesign.com/playbook. That's peakdesign.com/playbook for 20% off some of our favorite products and a picture of Ben on set dripping with Peak Design gear.
I'm literally going to try to put as many pieces of Peak Design gear as I possibly can into one picture.
I'm glad we just got health insurance because Ben's back is going to be demoed.
But not because the Peak Design stuff is heavy. The other shit that we put inside
well,
it.
Well, in bulk, it's heavy.
If you
stack enough
all...
Peak Design stuff.
Yeah, okay.
I'm but not saying it's sweet, heavy gear.
They got a
it's
sweet shoulder strap. It really takes the weight off your
it's
shoulder.
It's going to crush you to death.
If that's how I got to go, sayonara.
All right, coal plants are not the good guys, and environmental groups all over the country are trying to shut them down,
mm-hmm.
for obvious reasons. There's a big push by the Sierra Club to get coal plants shut down. The American Lung Association is also campaigning against coal plants, because
mm-hmm.
they care about your lungs,
mm-hmm.
sulfur dioxide.
Ostensibly.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like all they care about is making cool t-shirts and running 5Ks, but I guess on the side, they're also worried about your lungs mm-hmm. and health and that kind of thing. There's also this big push to make clean coal. The government sunk billions
clean
of dollars.
Coal. We're going to have beautiful clean coal.
Yeah, and like Obama's got a lot of clips of him saying he wants clean coal.
I can't really do an Obama. Clean coal.
He has a quote where he goes, clean coal, like that, that I really like. Anyway, so the U.S. government sinks billions of dollars into clean coal tech. None of the projects are able to profitably make coal-fired electricity. With the clean coal technology.
Great.
So it's 2009, mm-hmm. and coal is public enemy number one, and that's when the fracking boom pops off.
Ooh.
That's right. America suddenly finds out that a ton of natural methane gas that they thought was locked in the shale and they could never really profitably get it out,
mm-hmm.
it suddenly became available because of fracking and directional drilling that you could sort of steer from a little drill.
Okay.
And it is crazy how they steer drills, but they figured out how to actually steer a little drill wherever they wanted to go.
Is it like how submarines use game controllers?
No. It's very different.
Okay.
So fracking, of course, is hydraulic fracturing. You pump a bunch of fluids into the ground, into the shale layer that you've drilled. You force the fluids in and it fractures the rock. Then you suck the fluid back that's got all the little natural gas molecules in it.
It's basically a big soda stream.
It is not completely unlike a big soda stream.
Wow, that sentence took a turn. I thought you were going to stop with it is not. And then it kind of came down on my side.
I basically did stop with it is not, saw your face was sad, and then finished it with it's not completely unlike a soda stream. Because there are some elements the same, but most elements are different.
Okay.
You're pulling out both natural gas and oil, so they're kind of locked together. And then you suck the fluid back that's got all the oil and gas molecules in it. Now, oil and gas are together trapped in the shale layer, but you can separate them after you've got them back in the fluid.
Got it.
And there's this narrative just waiting for oil and gas companies. Coal is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Natural gas could replace coal. The enemy of your enemy is your friend.
Always.
So let me play you this clip. This is from 2008 from a media company called The Oklahoman.
In a time of record oil prices and fears of global warming, are we entering an age of natural gas? Hi, I'm Chris Castile in the Washington Bureau of The Oklahoman. I'm here with Aubrey McClendon, Chairman and CEO of Chesapeake Energy.
Absolutely no charisma.
I was literally going to say that almost verbatim. I can't imagine somebody who is less magnetic on camera.
And like he's reading like these are the first time he's seen these words together in a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Aubrey McClendon, Chairman and CEO of Chesapeake Energy, the Oklahoma City company that is one of the biggest producers of natural gas in the country. Mr. McClendon, thanks so much for coming in. You're very busy in Washington today. You just held a press conference about the supply of natural gas, and you're going to testify on Capitol Hill before the House Committee on Global Warming. What's your main message to policymakers here?
Our message today is natural gas abundance, that we have announced a study today that should provide the foundation on which a new energy policy for this country can be built, and also a brighter economic future can be imagined. And if and to take that a step further, we've always known that natural gas is a superior fuel. We just haven't known how much of it there is out there. And our study establishes that we have more than 100-year supply.
That was Aubrey McClendon. I mean, he's the CEO of a fracking company. It's pretty clear why he would be interested in natural gas kind of taking over the coal role in electricity. But he's also able to kind of co-opt the narrative of environmental groups like the Sierra Club. So here is Carl Pope. He's the former executive director of the Sierra Club. And here's his take on natural gas.
Great.
Tell me about natural gas. I know you've been spending a lot of time in that area.
Well, one of the interesting changes in our energy situation has been that we now understand that the United States, which has very little of the world's oil, actually has an enormous amount of the world's natural gas. So we have the opportunity to replace a very dirty fossil fuel coal with a much cleaner fossil fuel natural gas for the next 20 or 30 years, and that's going to make it even cheaper to decarbonize our economy.
Is that true that we don't have much oil?
In terms of the ratio of oil that we have, like Saudi Arabia, the OPEC countries have more of the oil of the world. But the U.S. has a ton of natural gas.
Okay.
So I think maybe the numbers are overblown there, but certainly one of America's claims to fame is having quite a lot of natural gas in the
shale. Got it. Okay.
And the logic, you know, kind of makes sense, right? Why the environmental groups would team up with natural gas. Number one, natural gas produces a little less than half of the CO2 that coal produces when you burn it for electricity.
Great.
Number two, natural gas produces 90 times less sulfur dioxide than coal.
Love it.
And number three, natural gas can be exported to other countries, which currently use coal. So we can, in one fell swoop, we can replace all this dirty coal from all over the world with American natural gas. Hello, job creation. Hello, natural gas money.
Hello, Raleigh.
Oh, God. It's falling. It found me. And while we're in the middle of destabilizing the world's energy use, natural gas will go away and renewables can sneak in.
Okay, I'm sold. Let's do it. Let's do a bunch more natural gas.
Awesome. Here's why all of that is wrong.
Oh.
All right, here we go. So the stat that natural gas produces less than half of the CO2 that coal does is technically true.
Yes.
But it doesn't take into account fugitive emissions. So we did a whole video about this, but basically when coal falls out of a coal car on the way to a coal-fired power plant, it just tumbles onto the ground and it becomes a rock.
Yeah, or a gift for a naughty child.
Yeah. Would you call that a gift? Is Santa giving a gift of coal?
I mean, I guess they can use it to heat their house. I assume it's like urchins mostly who are getting the coal.
Was coal like... Here, you're going to want this because you're cold. Was it, are we misreading the gift of coal? As
I think,
like,
I think it's like not as good as a toy. I think it's like getting socks.
But socks are, for somebody with cold feet, socks are better than a toy.
Yeah, but when you're 12, you don't want fucking socks.
When you're 12, but you're in 1800s times and you're like legally a grandparent at 12.
Feels like the topic of the podcast has drifted.
Okay, that's true. All right. So when coal falls out of a coal car, it's dirt. But when methane leaks out of one of the many millions of miles of natural gas infrastructure we have in America, it goes into the atmosphere, and it's now a greenhouse gas just like CO2.
Ooh. And methane is much worse than CO2, right?
That's right. Yes. Methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. It's got about 80 times the heat-trapping ability that CO2 has in a 20-year time span. Methane doesn't stick around as long as CO2, but for the time it's around, it's way, way, way worse.
Well, and it's also bad because there's so much – there's a ton of CO2 in the atmosphere already. Mm-hmm. So if things get way hotter because there's a bunch of methane, even if the methane falls out of the atmosphere, it's going to stay hot because of all the CO2.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, yeah, I guess like in the absolute near term, it is way worse than CO2, molecule for molecule.
Okay.
And so when we talk about CO2 emissions, we usually talk about CO2 equivalent emissions. Mm-hmm. So like if you emit a pound of CO2 and a pound of methane, you think about that like 81 pounds of carbon dioxide.
Oopsie.
In the short term, in the 20-year period.
Okay.
So that you can use it as a currency.
Sure.
To measure against. So the idea that it produces less CO2 is true, but we don't really give a shit about CO2 for the sake of being CO2.
Right.
We care about how much heat it traps.
Right.
And since methane can trap a bunch more heat, it's actually sometimes worse than CO2.
Mm-hmm.
And that wouldn't really be a huge problem, except for natural gas leaks a lot.
Uh-huh.
Like, a lot, a lot. It's kind of hard to estimate how much methane actually does leak, because there are, like I said, millions of miles of pipelines and gathering lines and wellheads and processing plants, and any kind of breakage or improper fixture could result in a methane leak.
Ooh.
Also, methane, odorless, colorless.
You can't even smell it.
Yeah. Yeah. They add the smell in.
So that if it's getting into your house, you can leave.
That's right. But if you had like natural gas straight out of the fracking fluid, it doesn't smell like anything.
Farm to table natural gas.
That's right. Yeah. I want artisanal natural gas, please. I want my house to blow up from fracked gas from somebody that I know the name of. Like I said, it's really hard to track it. Once methane kind of mixes with the atmosphere, it's really hard to figure out who leaked what methane.
Mm-hmm.
And there weren't like giant satellite monitoring systems in place, mm-hmm. which is the opposite of what all of my pothead friends were saying. But there's just no way to really track it. And so the way the EPA developed was to ask the oil and gas companies how much methane they were leaking.
That
and
then
doesn't
trust them. Seem like it's going to work.
Nicole, those guys are trustworthy, okay? That's their product here,
okay?
Let me ask you this. Okay, yeah, their product is methane,
uh-huh.
So they wouldn't leak it.
No.
You ever go to a McDonald's? Those guys are on it with every single order. They've never once dropped a fry on the ground,
uh-huh.
And they've never once taken a burger off the line.
Uh-huh.
What I'm saying is, if it's your product, there's no way you'd leak it.
Totally. Now, Raleigh, I'm sensing a hint of sarcasm.
Yes, that's right. So the break-even line is about 4% of fugitive emissions. You can lose about 4% of your methane to leaks before the use of natural gas is actually worse than the coal it was supposed to replace.
Okay.
Because of the way methane actually traps more heat than CO2 molecules.
Got it. Now, I'm going to take a wild swing here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say that because there's so many opportunities for failure in the methane system, because it's so big, that we're maybe losing a little more than 4%.
So that's a great swing. And the answer is, it depends on who you ask. So
okay.
there's been lots and lots of places that have tried to study
uh-huh.
the comprehensive fugitive emissions of the United States. And they are consistently all over the place.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pull up a list of about 15 of these studies. This is from Carbon Brief.
Mm-hmm.
As we can see from this bar chart of mm-hmm. different studies, most are between about 1% and 9%.
Okay.
So depending on who you ask, it's either pretty close to the break-even line,
uh-huh.
at the break-even line, or a little bit over the break-even line.
Yeah, okay.
So there's no like definitive study. Part of that is because a lot of who we have to rely on is the people who are leaking the methane themselves.
Yeah,
and
it doesn't
so,
seem like it would be really encourage you to report the leaks.
I mean, those guys seem pretty above board, don't you think? I mean,
yeah.
I guess they're the oil and gas industry.
Right.
Historically, a trustworthy bunch.
Yeah.
Who haven't lied about climate change in the past.
Raleigh, I have a great YouTube channel for you.
Oh, yeah?
That might change your mind.
Oh,
on that.
Ben Shapiro?
No. It's a little channel called Climate Town.
Holy shit, Nicole. this is such a crazy coincidence. I also have a channel called Climate Town.
What?
There's another channel called Climate Town out there. I smell a lawsuit.
Well, you know what you're not smelling?
Methane. Because they didn't add this little stinky smell. Who do you think came up with that stink smell?
I don't know, but it is very smart.
You can smell the hell out of it, yeah. But and also, like, think about this. All the times you've smelled that in your life.
A lot.
I even remember while we were filming the Climate Town video about methane leaks, we smelled a couple of methane leaks near different buildings. And I was just like, holy shit, this problem is so bad. All right, so the EPA currently uses about 2.3% as their fugitive emission number.
Okay.
And just a little fun extra, in 2013, they lowered their estimated fugitive emissions by 20% because the fossil fuel industry really promised they were doing better with leaks. So,
great.
These are the problems we have. This idea that natural gas is replacing coal's CO2 emissions with lower emissions is suspicious at best. It's wearing a bandit mask. It's holding a sack of money as a bank alarm is going off. Now, it could have brought that sack of money from home.
Yeah.
And the bandit mask might be a costume party thing. It sort of seems like it's maybe
I think if you're going to a costume party as a bandit, you got to not stop at the bank with a bag of money on the way. That's asking for
that
trouble.
That would be so funny, though. If you're like, oh, I'll go as a burglar for Halloween. And you're like, oh, the party's down the street. And you walk past a bank that just got robbed. And the cops are just like, well, this is a fucking layup.
Could you imagine?
So that's the replacement part. Number two, there's this idea that natural gas burns cleaner than coal, like less sulfur dioxide. That's true. That's just true.
Great. Okay, great.
I know I said here's why all of them are wrong. I needed to say that to wrong foot you here. This is the thing. Like, coal is terrible. Like,
yeah.
I don't ever want to advocate for coal. And in some ways, natural gas, also terrible, is not as terrible as terrible, terrible coal is terrible.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make natural gas good by comparison.
Sure.
In terms of the environmental damage that natural gas causes, it's not as bad as coal. Now, there is an environmental cost to natural gas, and that is largely from hydraulic fracturing or fracking, right? And that's a very different story. So fracking, of course, is when you pump a mixture of toxic chemicals and sand and water into the shale, you crack the shit out of the shale, and you suck the gas out. Obviously, this is damaging to the shale layer, the ground, but also the surface of the planet. A lot of states have banned fracking. Washington, Vermont, New York, a couple other states. Fracking has been known to contaminate your drinking water. It can lead to methane in your water.
There's that documentary where people like light their faucet on fire. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's those are not isolated incidents. Fracking is has been linked to a lot of problems at the water table. There's also pipeline infrastructure. There's access roads, all of which carries a risk of runoff getting into the drinking water.
You don't want that.
You don't want that because then you couldn't drink that water. Then it would just be
you could water. Once.
Yeah, it's true. You know, that's actually a good spin for fracking. It's still drinking water as long as you're only down to drink it once.
Yeah.
The rest of the water, not really recoverable. You can't return like fracking fluid laden water to the rivers and lakes that it's used to. You've got to. Yeah, I heard that too. And I was like, this is bad. You've got to like silo it off into tanks because it's really hard to get fracking fluid out of drinking water.
There's not like an effective treatment process for it.
I think it's prohibitively so expensive. Difficult. It's basically unrecoverable.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. There's also now just like swimming pools full of water that we have to do nothing with.
Well, they're not swimming pools. They're tanks that they've capped the top of. And sure, kids have been known to unscrew them and dive in. No, I actually don't. I'm not going to put that on natural gas. But there are a lot of reservoirs of fracking fluid that you cannot reuse again.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. This is a quote from the NRDC. Fracking wastewater can be radioactive, corrosive, and toxic to humans and wildlife. While companies do not need to disclose their full list of ingredients, the pollutants in the wastewater can include salts, organic hydrocarbons, oil and grease, inorganic and organic additives, and naturally occurring radioactive material.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Also, according to the NRDC, people who live near oil and gas wells experience elevated rates of poor pregnancy outcomes, including birth defects, preterm birth, and fetal death, cancer, respiratory and cardiovascular problems, and asthma exacerbation. That's from the NRDC.
I'm getting the sense that those are things we don't want.
I don't know your exact perspective on like fetal cancer, but I feel like
generally against.
I'm con normally. Yeah. And this is not as related to fracking, but there have also been a bunch of studies that show that people who have natural gas stoves in their homes, their children are more prone to getting asthma or having exacerbated asthma.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's tough. But between the lobbying from natural gas companies and the fact that we have a huge domestic supply of a commodity that other countries around the world want, the U.S. could not resist the siren's call of natural gas, and so we just dove in with both feet. We dove into a swimming pool
full of fracked water.
Yeah. Basically, no one was standing in the way of fracking, mm-hmm. and it really ran through the open door.
Got it.
So let me just pull up another clip here. This is Barack Obama talking about natural gas.
We've got a supply of natural gas under our feet that can last America nearly 100 years. Nearly 100 years. And developing it could power our cars and our homes and our factories in a cleaner and cheaper way. The experts believe it could support more than 600,000 jobs by the end of the decade. We, it turns out, are the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. We've got a lot of it.
That is the only time Saudi Arabia got that kind of standing ovation in the 2010s. So that's the perspective that we went into this with. Like, we got the natural gas, let's sell it. So fossil fuel companies realized they could make a ton of money. Environmentalists are happy to take coal down. So year after year, we have fracked more gas. Every year, we're consistently developing more of our natural gas reserves. And since America uses a ton of electricity to power our printers, that's all I can think of right now. But we got to use a lot of electricity for other stuff, uh-huh. right? We have tons of demand, and now we have a ton of natural gas supply. Insert supply into demand, natural gas, boom. Now, of course, there was a little bit of a natural gas bust in the 2010s. We had a ton of cash into fracking infrastructure, and OPEC decided, like, you know what, we're going to, like, increase the amount of oil and gas we're able to produce. So it sort of destabilized the American oil and gas market for a little while. But for the most part, natural gas's trajectory has just been up and up and up.
Now, is OPEC also producing methane?
Yeah, OPEC is also one of the main exporters of natural gas. So Got Iran it. Is a huge producer. Russia is a huge producer. Russia, of course, being part of OPEC Plus.
And so all of our little homegrown fracking companies couldn't all stay competitive. And so they went under.
Yeah.
All of them, but some of them did.
Yeah. There's a lot of like consolidation of fracking companies. Uh-huh. But for the most part, like American fracking is doing very well.
Okay.
Now, you know about killer whales in captivity and like when they are doing poorly, their fins kind of slump over to the side.
No, but that's so sad.
Is that not a known quantity? That happens.
Oh, it's God. Like God, I already thought it was a bummer that they were in captivity, and now to know that they also like wilt.
Yeah, and it's really sad. So the fin is kind of like a mark of how well the killer whale is uh-huh. doing.
I can't wait to see how this is going to connect to fracking.
The fin of natural gas is liquefied natural gas. Okay. So that's like our exports. And uh-huh. in this case, that fin is rock hard 50 feet long. Because we are exporting our natural gas like fucking gangbusters.
Okay.
So remember, LNG is liquefied natural gas. That's when we have so much natural gas that we can export it to other countries mm-hmm. instead of using it ourselves. Well, in 8 years, the United States went from exporting zero LNG from the lower 48 states, none, mm-hmm. to being the world's number one exporter this year.
USA.
We are number USA. One. We freaking finally did it. We have a bunch of export terminals in the Gulf of Mexico mm-hmm. and another bunch of export terminals all across America, total of 8 giant LNG export terminals. According to Reuters, the U.S. exported 88.9 million metric tons of LNG in 2023. That was up 14.7% from 2022, and it's expected to continue to increase.
Wow.
But that's not all, Nicole.
But that's not all.
But wait, there's more. The LNG infrastructure that's currently being built, like the stuff that's going to be coming online in the next couple years, is going to more than double our current LNG capacity.
Jesus Christ.
So remember, we're number one right now.
Yeah.
But the only person that's going to come kick our ass is ourselves.
Us. And then we're
going to
be double number one.
That's right. And that's not all, Nicole. Because
you're going to throw in a free slap chop?
Yeah, that's right. And two free slap chops. If you order in the next 5, years.
Oh, that's okay. Great. I'll think about it then.
Well, and you're thinking in the future. Uh-huh. And so are natural gas companies. And they've already got permits to build LNG infrastructure that will represent a tripling of our current capacity. So we've already issued permits for what will be triple our current capacity. So that's triple world number one. That's a hat trick.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And that's not all, Nicole. Because the proposed LNG infrastructure that's waiting to get permitted represents more than a quadrupling of our current LNG. It's like 4.7x what we currently export. However...
Please bring this back. Please bring it back into something that doesn't make me want to...
Yeah, that's like if it was...
My dorsal fin. Yeah. My metaphorical dorsal fin is floppy, and I need you to bring it back to a world where we're not going to quadruple our methane output.
I was trying to think about what quadrupling our world number one methane output, and it would be like if the Golden State Warriors, who normally win like 102 to 98, mm-hmm. imagine if they were like, we got to start scoring in the 400s, you guys. Imagine if the Warriors blew out a team 412 to like 91. That's what we were aiming at. However, and this is the good news, due to environmental activism, the Biden administration paused LNG permitting so they could look at, among other things, the perilous impacts of methane on our planet.
Thank God.
Yeah. So, I mean...
It's on pause.
It's on pause. That's not to say that this is not a victory of any kind. Mm-hmm. Like, American presidents are not often going up against the oil and gas industry. So this is like a very notable win.
Mm-hmm.
However, the rest of the LNG capacity that we're already slated to build is triple our current capacity. So it's a very good move, but after a series of very difficult losses.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Is there a chance that everyone building the new natural gas capacity will get raptured?
Yeah, what is that show with Justin Theroux?
The Leftovers.
The Leftovers. Will they all get taken up and what's left over is renewables in the ultimate bridge fuel? I mean, like I guess you can kind of like we can kind of cross our fingers and look at this as the first step in the rest of the bridge, right?
Yeah.
Like, if natural gas really is a bridge fuel, at some point we have to stop walking up the bridge and start walking down the bridge. Like, in a best case scenario, this is the beginning of us, like, cresting the Williamsburg Bridge and finally seeing babies all right on the ground.
Yeah.
That is a reference for only people.
That's fine. I think specificity adds color to the story.
That's true.
You know?
Although it's like sometimes it's you sort of disappear up the ass of specificity if you're not trying to be a little more inclusive.
Yeah.
Anyway, that finally brings us back to the whole like natural gas as a bridge fuel. So how would you define like a bridge, Nicole?
A bridge is something that spans a gap.
Okay.
And it gets us over something difficult to get from one side to the side we want to be on.
Right. One side to the side we want to be on. That's
how
I would...
That felt like a weird trick question. Like, define a chair without using the words, like, legs or seat.
This whole episode I have, like, been trying to basically, like, wrong foot you. So, like...
It's a trick.
That's the two for flinching. Yeah, where I'm like, what do you mean you flinched? Like... Anyway, that's also how I would think about a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you build infrastructure that costs billions of dollars, right, you need to get investors to put that money in,
mm-hmm.
and you need to basically guarantee those investors that you're going to make that money back over the next few decades. So what we're looking at here, all this natural gas infrastructure has to remain online for decades in order to pay off the investors that helped build it.
Ooh.
And that's not very consistent with the concept of a bridge fuel.
Yeah.
This is not the kind of stuff that you can retire early.
Mm-hmm.
We've sort of like called it a bridge fuel and then built the first part of the bridge, like the main tower that's going to support the rest of the bridge. And then we're like, shit, this is a nice castle. What if we just hung out here and lived on the bridge and never got to the other side?
I mean, I wouldn't want to do it personally, but apparently that's what America's doing.
Nicole, everybody's dream is to live in a castle. So if you don't want to live in a castle.
Seems like a lot to maintain.
I guess that's true. And it's like dark and dingy. Yeah. Yeah, okay. The real problem is that the reality of natural gas infrastructure is starting to butt up against the pledges that we made to decarbonize.
Yeah.
Right? Like the second half of the bridge is kind of not coming to fruition, and mm-hmm. it sort of needs to mm-hmm. in order for us to avoid catastrophic climate change. So the International Energy Agency, one of the premier energy agencies in the world, mm-hmm. says we need to decrease our global gas demand by 20% by 2030 and 75% by 2050.
But it seems like we're doing the opposite.
Yeah, we're increasing demand every year. And so every consecutive year, we have to then decrease the demand by even more to get back to where we should have been this year.
This is like me paying my credit card bill all over again.
Yeah, it's like you paying your credit card bill with another credit card that's got a worse interest rate. It's just like not a path to success. And it's like completely inconsistent with all of the massive increases in U.S. fracking and LNG export infrastructure.
Uh-huh.
On a more local level, there's a report from the Center for Sustainable Energy that shows that gas power plants that were beginning the permitting phase in California between 2016 and 2020 will still be operational beyond the year 2050.
Ooh.
But that's not consistent with California's decarbonization plans.
Yeah.
So we're like, there's real hard infrastructure holding natural gas, and then there's like plans to avoid climate change. And which one do you think is still going to be around?
Maybe we could turn them all into jungle gyms. We could repurpose them.
Yeah. I mean, that's upcycling, right?
Yeah.
But like, these are dystopian futures that we're describing. And we're like, setting
ourselves. Paintball courses.
Oh, that would be badass. Yeah. That would actually be awesome. Like natural gas plants as paintball tournament centers. Yeah. That's a cool plan because you
we
could like
it.
Shoot down the pipes and yeah. then like shoot a guy
Perfect.
From like 300 yards away.
That sounds awesome.
It does sound really cool. But we're like building this plan to get to the Olympics, but then also like not exercising at all. And it's like this, at some point we just have to realize that what we're saying and what we're doing are not
yeah.
on the same page.
Yeah.
And
also, if you didn't start building your plan for the Olympics when you were like 7 years old, then you're not going to the Olympics. I don't know what to tell you.
I guess I'm
going
to try curling.
That seems like something you could start later in
life.
Or
you could lobby the Olympics to add a new sport that you're already good at. Like I could do billiards. I could lobby them harder for billiards.
But there's so many people who are better than you at billiards.
Nicole, how fucking dare you? Not on this podcast.
That's true.
In the universe of this podcast,
you are much better than me at billiards.
I mean,
as we've seen time and again,
it doesn't matter who's better. We're the two best ones in the world of this podcast.
Okay,
you know?
Sure.
Like, that's we medal every time. One of us probably gets two medals. If you take gold, but give me silver, bronze, that's more hardware. I'll take it.
Okay, great.
And then we'll switch off every year.
Okay, you could have all three if you want. I got enough stuff in my apartment.
You have all the other events that you're going to be meddling in. So the way to actually make natural gas a bridge fuel is to start subsidizing the absolute hell out of the renewable energy industry.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we'd have to like use whatever extra resources we're able to get from natural gas and use that to hasten the development of renewables.
How would we do that?
I mean, just by taking extra resources and funneling them into battery development, funneling them into solar fields, into wind development, using
them
to lobby.
When you say we're taking extra resources from natural gas, does that mean like we're taking away the subsidies that those companies are given and giving them to renewable companies instead?
I think it's more like focusing on subsidizing the things we want to see more of and taxing the things we want to see less of.
Okay.
So if we start subsidizing more solar and wind projects and we start like easing permitting for renewable energy projects and making it harder to permit natural gas projects, which lo and behold, like they have started to do a little bit, this is the way that the bridge fuel narrative is actually fulfilled.
Okay.
But we're kind of doing just one little part of that, and we need to be like really hastening the development of renewable energy right now.
Got it.
Now, natural gas was the largest source of electricity. We had this year about 40% of U.S. electricity was from natural gas. It's been increasing every year since the 2000s and early 2010s. This is not the path of a bridge fuel. Mm-hmm. This is just the path of a replacement for coal, like mm-hmm. a one-in, one-out replacement for coal. We need to start like really bringing more renewables online and working with the grid to figure out a way to integrate storage.
Sure.
But the thing I really want to leave you with, Nicole, is that the natural gas versus coal debate is a classic false choice, mm-hmm. right? It's not either natural gas or coal. It's a classic Coke or Pepsi. You know, it's like, oh, also there's a ton of other sodas. There's Sprite. There's Mountain Dew.
Raleigh, I don't think we're going to have time for you to list all
Barg's
the sodas.
Root beer. Hang on, I got more. There's Vanilla Coke.
It's but I have stuff to do after the podcast.
There's
so.
Starry, whatever the fuck that is. But ultimately, there's also water.
Yeah.
There's also stuff that's good for you.
Yeah.
And so when we...
And as a longtime soda hater, I appreciate that.
That's right. And in this metaphor, water is renewables, right?
Great.
Water is something that's not Coke or Pepsi. Mm-hmm. But when you take the Pepsi challenge, then you're already kind of locked into this dumb dichotomy. Then you're immediately losing.
Yes.
We spend billions of dollars on natural gas infrastructure. We could be pumping that money into solar, into wind. Now, there is this narrative that like, oh, renewables aren't ready. Renewables will come online when they come online. Renewable energy is currently cheaper than fossil energy. This has been true for a couple of years now. There's this company called Lizards. Sounds a lot like
lizards.
Lizard. It's Lizards. They put out a graph every year that's LCOE, or the levelized cost of energy. I'm going to pull up the one from April 2023. You can look right at the levelized cost of energy in an unsubsidized analysis, and the cheapest energy is solar PV at a utility scale. The next cheapest is wind.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Now, gas combined cycle, the most efficient version of gas electrical generation, that is the third cheapest form of electricity, but it's still more expensive than both utility solar and wind.
Wow, okay.
The grid hasn't historically been designed for intermittent energy sources like solar and wind, so you have to like put a battery in it. You have to incorporate battery storage in some way, or some kind of energy storage.
Now, Raleigh, I hate to cut you off, but Please. We have a whole episode coming up that touches on this. So
oh, shit. On batteries specifically, or?
On The Sun Doesn't Always Shine?
Oh, yes, we will.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to talk about this in the other episode, but suffice to say that like, there's an, I guess, a quote that is often attributed to Einstein, but probably some dipshit sewed it onto a pillow and like, nobody likes this. Einstein said it. Oh, now it's a t-shirt. And it's like, if you judge...
Wow, from pillow to t-shirt.
Yeah, the pipeline. If you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, you'll think it's an idiot. Mm-hmm. But like, that's not what a fish does best. A fish gets fried up in oil and tastes... No, a fish swims, right? Like,
yeah.
A monkey climbs a tree, a fish swims. We built the grid to cater to
coal and gas.
That's right. Like a fuel source we can like dispatch immediately and like get electricity out of it.
Scale up and down and stuff.
Yeah. And we now have access to a bunch of different styles of energy. It's just about reorganizing the grid to incorporate all this new, cheaper, renewable energy.
Gotcha.
And there's a lot of resistance to that for a lot of reasons. Chief among them, the fossil fuel industry has a ton of money.
Okay.
I want to leave you on a quote by this guy, Mark Z. Jacobson from Stanford University. He's got a PhD.
Well, natural gas puts out about 60 plus times more air pollution and carbon per unit electricity generated than wind power does, for example. So it's really an opportunity cost. It doesn't actually, if you spend $1 on natural gas versus $1 on wind, well, aside from the fact that wind is now cheaper than natural gas, but let's say that it was the same, you're by spending that money on natural gas, you're putting out 60 times more carbon and air pollution. So we're not solving the problem.
Now, natural gas might produce less greenhouse gases than coal, or it might not. That could be true, but it's definitely not the right way to look at it.
It's definitely more than renewables.
Right. Yeah. That's the ultimate takeaway here, that like when you say coal versus gas, you forget that there's a much better solution.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, building more natural gas infrastructure just makes it harder and harder to get away from natural
gas.
So there are better alternatives. we need to stop greasing the wheels of natural gas because people thought it might be better than coal back in 2008 when you were a freshman at NYU.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to get out of a hole by continuing to dig just with a different shovel.
Which is why that phrase, you got to dig yourself out of that hole, is so confusing.
That's right. Is that a phrase?
I hear people say it.
Are they saying it kind of sarcastically?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, yeah. If you hear people say that whole... If you,
call them stupid.
Yeah.
Call them stupid to their face.
You punch them right in their ugly mug and you say, that's not right. So where are we now? Well, the government is kind of maybe moving away from just rubber stamping all this new infrastructure. We've got a bunch of satellites that are going up that are going to help us monitor methane leaks. But without like serious government oversight and a lot more activism, there's not really a mechanism to force natural gas into a sort of downslope that it was saying it was going to do as a bridge fuel.
Right.
That is coal versus natural gas. And the answer is...
Neither.
Coal. No, neither. Neither is correct. Neither is correct.
Okay, Rowley. So we like to close it out with a little... improv comedy. So how about this? How about let's be at a city council meeting?
Got it. Am I too late?
No, you're just
on
time.
God. It's,
we were actually just about to finish hearing proposals for the new bridge.
Oh, good. Okay, I have that. And I have
oh,
one.
Great.
I have
wow, you
really
got here
one.
Just in time.
Oh,
I was
my
about
God.
To bang my gavel. Okay, great.
What, thank you, Judge. Thank you so much.
What's your... Well, it's the gavel was a gift from my wife. It's... I'm not...
A gift from your wife that you use in an official capacity. I understand completely.
Yeah, exactly.
My wife is also a real battle axe.
Uh-huh.
All right, I got my blueprints.
Okay, let's hear your proposal for this awesome bridge.
Okay, this bridge is the best bridge of all time.
Okay.
Okay, you start with a foundation.
Okay.
Every good bridge needs a good foundation.
I agree so far.
We're going to build this foundation on our side of the river.
Okay.
Obviously, it's a bridge from our side of the river to the other side of the river.
Yes.
Start with a foundation.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to use barbed wire to fortify that foundation.
Barbed wire.
That's right.
And do you mean rebar?
I mean razor wire barbed wire.
Okay.
The kind that if you even touch it, it kills you and everyone you've ever met.
Oh, wow.
This is super barbed wire.
They shouldn't make that.
They shouldn't, but they do.
Okay.
It is a violation of the Geneva Convention. I have the patent for it. I did invent it. And this is the kind of wire I want to use. And I'm not taking no for an answer.
Okay. Well, let's hear the rest of your proposal. Yeah, okay.
I think you're really going to like it. Okay. So first we do the barbed wire,
mm-hmm.
and then we build an enormous monolith out of obsidian, hewn from raw obsidian that just goes straight up, razor sharp edges. There's no way to get
over it. Why is your bridge so sharp?
It's because it's trying to keep out marauders. I'm pretty worried about marauders. I just saw Mad Max 2.
Okay.
Pretty heavy marauder influence in that movie.
I mean, this is Des Moines. I'm not that worried about marauders.
We got to get over the Des Moines River, though.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So obsidian cliffs, effectively.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Machine gun turrets on all the corners. How many corners? 8. It's an octagon. Bet you didn't see that coming.
I mean, I didn't. I assumed it was going to be more of a line.
No, it's an octagon.
Okay.
Okay. And then you're going to dig down deep. And we're going to fill it with saltwater crocodiles. It's a moat surrounding this foundation of this part
of
the bridge.
Is the moat part of the river?
Yes. It's going to be brackish water for part of it because the river is freshwater. Obviously, we're in Des Moines.
Uh-huh.
But the part of my moat is going to be saltwater.
So you're getting saltwater crocodiles for the moat.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
And we will be getting...
Don't look at me like I'm stupid. I've never built a moat before.
Well... Part of a pretty serious part of my bridge construction is going to be moat building.
Okay.
All right. We got the machine gun turrets. We got the obsidian wall. We got the moat. The best part is it's done. Done deal.
Okay. When?
Bridge over. Finished.
Bridge over.
Bridge over.
So it does go over the river, to be clear.
It goes up one side of the river, and it is heavily fortified on all sides.
Okay, but we're trying to get across the river.
I feel like I'm talking in circles here. We're going up.
Uh-huh.
That's the bridge.
Okay, we're trying to get to a new and better future on the other side of the Des Moines River.
I'm also trying to do that, yes.
That's where the good mall is. It's on that side, and we all want to get there.
We got to get... It's got a fucking sharper image over there.
I know.
It's got a Brookstone. I got to get a little massager neck pillow that's also a coffee maker.
Do you need to get two? One from Sharper Image and one from Brookstone?
Yes. Okay. And I'm going to compare prices. I'm going to return one.
Oh, that's smart.
That's right.
So just in the plainest terms possible...
Okay.
Is your bridge going to get to the other side of the river where we need to go?
I didn't know we were having gotcha questions already. Technically, no. But it's going to be such an amazing bridge in its verticality that I feel like no one's even going to worry about whether it goes over the actual physical river or not.
Okay, well, I feel like this should probably be obvious, but it's...
Me too. I think we're on the same page.
We're not on the same page. Here's the thing. You don't build a bridge for the sake of the bridge. You build a bridge because the bridge allows you to go where you want to go.
Right. Up.
Across. We have seen 7 proposals for bridges that all reach the other side of the river.
It sounds to me like you heard the rest and now you want the best.
Okay, well, this plan is idiotic, but unfortunately, the rules of public comment are that you have at least 5 minutes to speak. So let's entertain this a little bit longer. Is there a way that we can make this work somehow to get to the other side? Can we install a zip line or maybe treat it like a dock to get a ferry across the river or something?
Oh my God, are you talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you said idiotic. I'm so sorry. Yeah, is there a way to do that? Okay, how about this? How about this? So, like, obviously you're fucking obsessed with the other side, right?
Yes.
What if we replicate a lot of the other side on our side of the bridge? So we're not obsessed with the other side. We're obsessed with what the other side has, right? It's got the mall. It's got the Sharper Image. It's got the Brookstones. We'll put a Brookstones on the bridge.
Do you make money by us not going across the bridge?
Wow. I don't know where to begin to not answer that question.
And that's 5 minutes. Okay, thank you so much. We'll consider your proposal.
Awesome. So I assume this is a yes, and this is just a formality because you have to pretend that you're going to accept other people's proposals. But I will say, do not exit through the back because I got a lot of that special barbed wire that I patented back there. The stuff that'll kill every single person you've ever met.
Okay, I'm just going to turn to my fellow council people. That's a no on this bridge, right? Big no on this bridge?
Am I one of the council people?
No.
The Climate Deniers Playbook was created by Raleigh Williams, that's me, Nicole Conlon, and Ben Bolt.
Our hosts are Raleigh Williams and Nicole Conlon, who is me, and our executive producer is Ben Bolt.
The show is produced by Gregory Haddock and edited by Brittany Terrell.
Our researchers are Carly Rizzuto, Knut Haraldson, and James Krugnail.
Theme music from the smooth, sultry mind of Tony Dominic.
And artwork by Jordan Dahl, who, yes, is technically my boyfriend, but that's not why we hired him. He's actually just really good at art.
Special thanks to the Civil Liberties Defense Center.
And to all of you who actually listen to the show.
And apparently even the credits.
Now that's dedication.
Hello, natural gas money.
Hello, Raleigh.
Oh, God, it found me.